Welcome to episode 3 of the Dentistry Online podcast. Today I am chatting to Judith Husband, a general dental practitioner, local dental committee member, and owner of a consultancy company. We are going to be talking about where she thinks dentistry is heading, female representation within the sector, and what it was like to deliver dental care inside a prison. So what's your lockdown look like so far?
Well, so far it's been extremely busy. The first, running into that very first weekend in March when we did have the shutdown, we instantly had a lot of meetings over that weekend with our local dental committee because we were looking to set up the urgent care hubs. It was quite an exciting time in its own way. And it was lovely to have something to actually concentrate on, rather than all of the noise as such externally, and also to have something that's a degree of control as well. So a small group of us from the local dental committee here in Northamptonshire got together, and we worked across with Salaried Service, Community Dental Service, and really by this Sunday evening, we actually had our model up and ready to run. Of course, life isn't always that simple. And although we had the model, we knew how we wanted to do it. We were going to have hot and cold hub and shielded patients were going to be looked after. Then it all got a little bit more complicated. And a couple of weeks down the line, we finally went live.
And how's it been up till now?
Well, we've had very little care available locally up till now. So it's really been down to the practices. But what we did from day one, from that first weekend really, was get together a WhatsApp group. We kept all of the dentists in Northamptonshire as informed as possible in real time. Tried to reach out to all the private practices as well, because although there's a small number, they're really important and we wanted them to be on board and to understand what was going on. And so we sort of shared everything that we could in real time and reinforced this idea that we all have to work together, that when the hubs are up and running, many of us are potentially going to be working in there. And so we've got to sort of look out for each other. We've got to look after our patients and also protect the A&E teams, and then also protect the hub teams. So I think we got that message out quite well locally. I know that there have been problems nationally as well. And it's this postcode lottery that's always the challenge within dentistry and NHS dentistry in England. I looked across the way to Wales with great envy, because they had themselves so well organised.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a lot easier over there, isn't it, though? You know, in the sense, I'm not taking it away from their hard work away, but it's a lot smaller. And it's inevitably, if there's fewer people, it's going to be a little bit more straightforward, I think, when it comes to getting things set up.
Yeah, they've got unique challenges, certainly in Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland. But I think key to their successes to date have been very clear leadership. You know, they've been able to look to their chief dental officers who've been able to be much more responsive than Sarah has in England. So there's an awful lot of learning to be had from the last couple of months, without doubt.
I think that's applicable to a lot of situations, a lot of industries and sectors, actually. Yeah, it's definitely a learning curve for just the entire world. I think it's not something that we could have anticipated, but no, for sure. I mean, how do you think this is going to change dentistry? Do you think that it will have a long-term impact on the way you guys practice?
I think this is going to change the way we all view the world and our place in it and how interlinked we are. I hope that there will be some major improvements that fall out of this. I mean, just on a local level, the way that we've worked with pharmacies and, you know, reached out and actually know who our local pharmacy is and breaking down those barriers. And then in the much, much broader picture of actually, you know, starting to do remote consultations and all of the benefits that can give. We're seeing within the broader NHS, traditional structures just been, you know, blasted out of the way as such, you know, to make way, because when something has to be done and needs to be done, you know, I think we're seeing that, that it can be. And so it, moving forward, I think this idea that it's not possible you know, that people will be much more optimistic, I hope, and also much more determined that, you know, if it is something that needs to be done, then it has to be done. So
it's definitely shows that being flexible is key, I think. You know, it's really sort of hammered home that idea that we need to adapt and have different options available. So yeah, I understand what you mean.
And I think communication as well, actually talking to each other.
I mean, that's important. And yeah, absolutely. And I know, I think it was within the NHS as a whole, things like Microsoft Teams was made available. And I know, you know, particularly in dentistry, it's quite difficult to practice remotely for obvious reasons. You know, you do need to see inside a patient's mouth. You can't beat that classic, you know, the traditional face-to-face consult. That's never gonna, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a dentist, but I can't imagine that's ever going to be, go away. You know, you're always gonna have to look, there in person.
But I think it's challenged us a little bit that we were always the people that said, well, we can't work from home. You know, we're so special in dentistry, we can't possibly do that. And yet we're proving that we can. And a lot of the time, a lot of our patient interactions are really about communication. And we can do a much better job sometimes, I think, by actually talking and listening rather than what we normally do, which is leap on a person and start looking in their mouths. And I think perhaps that's part of the learning, is that we are realizing that we're actually dealing with a person at the end of the day. And one of the challenges of remote consultations is they do take more time. They're not quick and they're not simple. And so it's a very different type of care. But the consultation is all part of that care pathway. And I think moving forward, we're learning that. And that dentistry is not that special. We would like to think we are, but we're not.
I mean, with coronavirus in mind, perhaps, but also, I guess at the moment, it's kind of difficult to envision a future with it not being involved, because obviously, you know, everything's so up in the air, we're not entirely sure where everything's heading. Where would you see dentistry heading within the next 5 years? So you've just spoken about remote consultations. Is that something you think we'll see more of?
I think we will, and there are huge opportunities within that. I'm thinking, because there's always been our older population, especially those in care homes, have always been underserved, certainly since the 2006 contract in England. And so moving forward, this is potentially one of those ways of reaching out and to getting to hard to reach groups. But I think dentistry, I mean, we've always known what dentistry needs to be, but we've never quite managed to take that step into that brave new world as such. We know that most of what we do is dealing with things that can be prevented. And the patient education, engagement, and, you know, reaching out early and preventing the need for a drill has always been the ideal, but we've never really taken that step forward. And I think now we are going to be forced to do that in the near future. And I suspect when we look back, we might not want to be picking up the drill quite as much. And I would hope that is where we are heading. Patients don't like to be drilled and filled. And I think a lot of dentists are realizing that the actual interaction and patient involvement and discussion is actually very rewarding. Frustrating as well, of course, because we do want to fix stuff. But I think we need to move, it's said a lot, the oral physician, and this idea that we are definitely now part of healthcare, and that it's not just a case of fixing teeth. My concern, and that's how I would have said we were heading for the next 5 years, my concern now is that the longer this goes on, that we are now, we're building up a cohort of patients who desperately need care. And when we finally get up and running in our various guises, that population, they will always need that care now. and it will be more complex. So as each week ticks by, the type of work that they need to fix that tooth, or now that they've lost the tooth, you know, we're never going to catch that back. So the sooner that we can start to mitigate the damage that's going on now, the better place we will all be in 12 months, 24 months, 36 months. And I'm also very conscious now that we're part of a global community. More so than ever, we must realise when we see the telly, you know, everybody's suffering in the same way. All around the world, people are having conversations like you and I, whereas we used to be face to face. So we've now got a shared experience on a global level, which as a profession as well, taking forward, but also just as individuals, I hope we see things in a much broader picture rather than our own little world and silos. So I think dentistry, I would hope, and I would expect us to be a lot more integrated within healthcare, but also connected around the world more so, because we're all going to have to do things in a very similar way, at least for the short term, regardless of payment structure.
No, absolutely. And I think if we're going to take something away from this, it's definitely that there needs to be more communication between everybody, if that makes sense. I mean, obviously a personal level as well, but if we're talking strictly professionally, you know, in dentistry, talking to, like you said earlier, you know, triaging with pharmacies, with other dental practices, directing people to the UDCs and things like that. And it, you know, I wouldn't wish this situation on anybody, but it's got to, like you were kind of, I think, alluding to there a little bit, is that we have to take something out of this, and what will be taken out is that idea that there's got to be sort of a more integrated approach.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very easy, because this is a dreadful, dreadful time. You know, people are losing loved ones. And unfortunately, we have to face the reality that this is not going to disappear within a few weeks or a few months. This is our new normal. I'm now getting into COVID bingo, aren't I?
I think it's accurate.
This is our new normal. And I think the sooner that we can, as professionals, also as a society, but let's focus just on dentistry, the sooner that we can actually accept this fact and then see, okay, how do we fit into this, and how do we build the flexibility that we need within our businesses, within our services, then the faster we will actually come through and actually have a positive outcome. Because yes, businesses are under huge stress. Under huge stress. As individuals, you know, we're all facing our own financial challenges and also our own personal challenges. But we are here, and we can't change it at the present time. And that, yes, it's right to grieve. It's right to miss a past life. And hopefully we will get there again at some point in the future. But I think it's much more healthy and it's much more productive to start to look at, okay, how do we fix the bit that we can fix? Dentists like fixing things.
That's true. That is in your nature.
Yeah. So, but we can't fix the big stuff at the moment. So how do we make things work on a smaller scale? Most of us have found new ways of working and living within our home. So then it's the next step of how do we make our businesses fit in here? Yeah, not all of that is in our control, but you know, we can shape things. I've always believed that throughout my life, is that most of us are in a very privileged position in dentistry, and we do have control, and we can shape our futures to a varying degree.
No, I agree. That's a good way to look at it. I mean, moving away from coronavirus, I guess now, a little bit completely, actually, put that to the side for a second. And What would your advice be for women starting up in the dental industry, particularly younger women who might be coming out of, you know, university? There are dental nurses who start, you know, mid-teens. What would your advice be for them at the moment?
I've always been a big believer in being informed, because I think the old adage, information is power. But the more that you can be informed and understand the state of play, then the better placed you are then to decide where you wish to fit in. So it doesn't matter, it applies equally to men, of course, as well as women. But I think the key thing is to be well informed and to understand if you are going to be joining the profession or the industry, we can have another debate about that one. it's important to know the wider context. I mean, people in business will be really used to the PESL exercise. And I think it's never a case of just thinking, I want to be a dentist or I want to be a practice owner. It's important to know all the drivers surrounding that. So information, first of all, and then stay informed. The part of the issue now probably is information overload, because there is just so much out there. So I think then it becomes key to try and find some trusted sources. And this is where we come on to having mentors. There's a lot said about thought leadership and things like that, especially on social media, but you really can't beat the old fashioned having a friend almost. And that can be a professional friend as well as in the traditional sense. We do have some formal networks for women, certainly for women dentists, but there are also the informal networks. And I think building up your own little black book, really, of people that you can rely on and that have experience in different fields.
Okay, no, that's interesting. Do you think there is enough representation? I mean, I'm focusing purely on women here because I know you fight sort of for female representation within the industry. I've seen some of your tweets and things like that, and you're very much.
I do like to wind Eddie Crouch up as well, and all my old friends.
Yeah,
we need to keep them busier.
But yeah, so you are a big advocate, yeah, for sort of, you know, women, female representation.
I use my platform.
You use your platform for that. Do you think it's dentistry is lacking female representation in top roles? Is that something that is a concern of yours, or do you think it's heading in the right direction?
It's a really difficult one to answer. I rally against this belief that because we've got a large number of women in the profession, that there isn't a problem. And I think it's a little bit lazy, and it's easy to reassure oneself that there are loads of women dentists, mm-hmm, so we don't have a problem. There has to be a recognition and understanding of the barriers and the challenges that individuals face. I have absolutely no doubts that there are significant barriers to women being involved, certainly within the political side of dentistry. Having done it, and having been involved from being a student right up until a couple of years ago when I left the PEC, I know, looking back now, just the amount of time and effort it really takes to be thoroughly embedded. I mentioned about the importance of knowledge and information, but invariably the only way you can gather that is by going to the meetings, is by going to the conferences, and invariably an awful lot of the serious stuff, it is done in the pub and it is done in the bar. And if you're, you know, a mum, or, you know, you don't have an understanding partner or husband, then you're not going to be able to hang out till 2-3 in the morning, and you're not going to build those relationships. Now, Eddie would knock me down on that one, which is fine. But the level of personal commitment, I think, that's required for the very senior leadership roles, and is considerable. We can nurture and we can encourage, and I hope now that this type of communication, the fact we are all having Zoom meetings and the dreaded Teams as well for those of us in the NHS, that these will present new ways of working. But we must never underestimate. What I rally against most is just this assumption. And we all know that there are challenges there. And of course, it's not just women; it's all minority groups as well. And for me, my biggest criticism has always been from my union, for the BDA, because I believe that they should represent us and they should take our concerns seriously. And I know they do, and sometimes it might look like I really am poking at the hornet's nest, but you know, that needs to be done now and again, doesn't it?
No, absolutely. Yeah, it's I think it's the idea of accountability and yeah, just sort of, you know, if that's, they are there to represent and speak for you, then you totally, that's the I think that's just how the world works, really, isn't it? You need to make sure you're continuously bringing up these topics and highlighting them, otherwise there'll be no change and nothing ever progresses. So
I suppose I also feel a little bit guilty as well, because having grown up in quite a golden age with individuals like Susie Sanderson and Janet Clark and numerous other amazing women who were involved at BDA, I really thought it was job done. And so while I was there, it's a classic, you know, I didn't see that there was a problem, but it's only when you step away that you start to think, well, hang on a minute. And I think it's more the challenge and I like to see the response actually as well, because I think an organisation or a business that's confident in what it's doing and its systems and its policies, you know, it should have no issue with being challenged, and it should embrace that challenge and use it to make things better. And there are some fantastic organisations out there that really take gender equality very, very seriously, and they see it as a business critical issue. And certainly for any membership organisation, it is business critical. And when we look at the demographics of the profession, so there's a big business case there for inclusivity. And my concern is, over recent years, that it's fallen off the agenda. It's not been seen as important, and it is.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in an ideal world, what would dentistry look like for you? I know that's quite a big question, but you know what you know. Does, I know that's probably, you could talk about that for a while, but I mean,
levels of beauty gazing, and then there's that.
What kind of things would you like to see happen? I don't know. It doesn't. Yeah, just a couple of things you think would be.
So dentistry, as in clinical dentistry or profession?
Let's stick with just sort of professionally. I'd say.
Yeah, I suppose.
No, it's quite. We can just skip past.
Well, I mean, for dentistry itself, I mean, ideally, you don't really want dentistry to have to exist, because you'd want health there, wouldn't you? So my ideal for dentistry is that we move more to the maintaining what's already out there and the preventing, and so we do move towards that oral health physician type of model, but fully integrated into health and social care, because I think that health, well, dentistry is way too isolated, then we come down to health, and then we come down to social care. So it's this whole looking after the person is where we really should be at. But we also have an advocacy role out in society as well. We move on to things like sugar tax and fluoridation of water. You know, these are sensible public health measures that the profession should be advocating for. So when I asked you, well, what is dentistry? You know, what do we mean by dentistry, the profession, the industry, the individuals? It is so big. And that's why I really struggled with that.
Sorry about that. It's, you know what? It came out of my mouth and I was like, this is too challenging.
I read your draft and I thought, oh yeah, that's pretty easy to answer. Oh, hang on a minute. It was one of those, it was only when you verbalised it, I thought,
it's wet, and your mind's going in a bunch of different directions, and you just, no, sorry, that's my fault. But anyway, I mean, I did a little bit of research, and I know you used to work as a dentist in prisons, is that right?
Yeah. I was inside for 16 years.
Wow, okay. And I was just hoping you could maybe sort of tell us a little bit about that and sort of how that compared to what came afterwards.
Well, But during my time in jail, I was always working in practice as well. So I was never purely prison. I was also a general practitioner in prison. So I tendered for the contracts. They were commissioned services. So again, it was a little bit different to some of the dental teams who tend to be under the auspices of community care or larger corporates and things like that now. So I always worked in general practice, and at one point I worked in a very nice, fully private practice in Oxford in the morning, and then in the afternoon I was down with the young offenders in Aylesbury. So I was seeing opposite ends of the social spectrum in the same day, and it was fascinating. Even our children were private in this practice. It was just totally, totally private. People would pay by signing a Coutts cheque type private. I was also in NHS practice. So I've always done both. And that it sort of stems back from when I first qualified and I did general professional training. So I did hospital and general practice at the same time, alternating days. So prison dentistry taught me an awful lot. It taught me about population dentistry and how to deal with large numbers of people with significant need and how to prioritise, which came in very useful later when I worked with refugees. And it's something that we as a profession will now need in every single practice once we open up again after that thing that we can't mention anymore is finished. The COVID crisis. Because we will all need to prioritise care. The other thing that prison taught me was the importance of consent and note keeping, because litigation was very, very high. At any one point, I would always have a live case ongoing, and dental protection were always incredibly supportive on that. But it was just a part of life. It taught me about commissioning care as well, because we had to go through the whole tendering process. And probably most importantly, I was part of the healthcare team. So I worked with nurses, doctors, psychiatrists. And that, again, is where I think we're going to need to be looking more. And it's a good way of working. Fundamentally, the dentistry, it's just clinical dentistry. It's not any different to anything that we would do in practice, but the actual systems and the interactions that surround it.
You're glad you worked within a prison setting?
Okay. Most definitely. I think it gave me such an insight into a different type of care delivery. It's not even just about dentistry, as well as, of course, the whole tendering process within the NHS, because that in itself is a very unique skill set. So although I sort of fell into it originally, the broader experience has been invaluable. Even before we start talking about social rights and wrongs of and the philosophy of incarcerating people in prison, which again is another podcast.
We could go off on a lot of tangents here, I feel. Did you have any, any odd experiences, any strange or difficult experiences in there that sort of stood out that you think that really taught me something, or was it all kind of...
There were always individual cases and patients. Most of the time, I mean, the ones that I do really remember are just the personal stories, the stories behind the prisoner, behind the patient. That invariably, I always figure that they're not that many evil people in the world. The vast majority of people in jail are just a little bit sad. They've had really unfortunate lives, generally lots of addictions, and they've made horrendous choices. And there were always a very small number who were very, very nasty. And you think, yes, you do need to be away from society, and we need to be protected from you. But a very, very small number relative to how many are in jail. Generally, the patients were extremely thankful for the service that we provided, and for the general chats that we would have as well. So, I mean, dentistry is always full of funny anecdotes, but
I bet. I just thought, you know, working in a prison setting isn't something that I can imagine many dental professionals get to experience. So I just thought I'd ask that question to see if there was anything, like you
generally
said.
Generally the surgeries were really, really well equipped. They're probably not now. I think we're going down onto one of those curves again where they'll need massive investment in a year or so's time. But it was more the team around the actual service that we were providing. It's not a place I would like to be now, to be honest. I know that numbers of officers were decreasing significantly when I came to the end of my final contract. And to be in a jail with the current pandemic would be truly frightening as well. Because we did a lot of training for the flu pandemic back when we had swine flu. I'm getting my very swanky mask out.
Oh wow! you were in during the swine. So this is what 09, 10, wasn't it?
Yeah. So we were all fit tested. We all had our masks provided, yeah. And we were all ready to go should there be a pandemic. Obviously things are a bit different this time.
Years later, there's a big difference, I can imagine. But
I do think the care, the medical care that's provided in prisons is important. A lot of time it's sort of ridiculed, it's felt that they don't deserve care. But even if you want to look on it as point of view, that the vast majority of prisoners will be released and they then will need to access care on release. So it's an extension really of public health. By actually looking after them well when they're inside, you're reducing the impact on services when they are released. And I think that's possibly an argument that's sort of been lost in the current political situation. And again, it's something that the profession should be advocating for and should be more interested in.
Well, like you said earlier, it's about preventing problems from developing, and you know what might not appear urgent at face value at this very second could later become an urgent matter if it's left untreated. So I understand what you mean in that tackling it there and then is in the long run going to have a better impact on
better outcome, and it also saves money as well if you want to be really brutal
unfortunately that's what makes the world go round, so it's a consideration that has to be taken. So okay, just to finish off, there is just one more question. I was just wondering what it was if there is something that you enjoy doing or something about you that people may not know outside of dentistry. I mean, anything
interesting? I have no life outside dentistry at all.
I can't believe that. I refuse to believe that.
I don't have many secrets actually in life, because you know, all my time spent on social media. I guess what would probably surprise people most is I'm actually a very, very quiet person. I like to be on my own. I'm an only child. So this type of lockdown is almost perfect world for me in some respects, because I can just sort of shut myself away. Doing dentistry has really forced me to be more outgoing personality wise. But deep down, I do like a really quiet life, which is very boring.
How you look at it, it's I don't know. I disagree. I don't think it has a quiet life doesn't have to be boring. I don't think. I think you're being too harsh on yourself there.
I suppose it's just being happy with your own company, isn't it? And although I do annoy myself at times quite successfully, but generally I enjoy my time with my patients. I absolutely love doing things like this, having arguments on Twitter, big meetings, conferences. I also like to shut the door and really have that quiet time.
Nothing wrong with that, I don't think. Nothing. But thank you very much for talking to me.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Gabby.
I hope you have I hope lockdown, fingers crossed, this things only get better from here on in. But yeah, like I said, thank you very much, and I'm sure
it is my pleasure. I'm more than happy to natter about anything at any time, as you probably gathered.
That's great, thank you.